Matt Bubala here with you, 720 WGN. We'll be here till 5 in the morning. We'll check in again with Roger at the top of the hour, but if there's any breaking news, he will break in as necessary. We'll jump away from Syria for a little bit. We'll talk about that and President Trump a little bit more later on in the show. But I want to jump to something we've talked off and on about over the last couple of months, and that's travel to Mexico. As you know, if you've listened to the show for the last 4 or 5 years, I love going to Mexico. This is the first year in like the last six that Colleen and I never got a chance to go down. Last year, we took the kids for the first time. I love going down to Cancun and the Riviera Maya, Playa del Carmen area. And it's, you know, for the most part, it's never been trouble at all. And as I sit here looking out on Michigan Avenue in this ridiculous April weather that we're having this weekend, I would like to be in Mexico right now. There'd be no reason I couldn't do the show from there.
None whatsoever. You could take me, too. I could be your valet.
Yeah, we could figure something out, I would think.
Of course.
But there are all of these stories, and it started with a great investigative piece from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel about all these people from Wisconsin that have gone down and had issues with blacking out, with passing out. And at first, when you're reading, you're like, well, Wisconsin, they're drinking pretty heavy. But then you say, wait a minute, people who know how to hold their drink. And they're saying, nope, only had two. And suddenly I wake up, knees all scraped up in my hotel room, or some cases of assault. Real issues with going to the hospital and basically feeling like you're being held for ransom in a way because they're asking for all this cash before they'll treat you. Resorts not wanting to call the police, not wanting to call you an ambulance. You're taking cabs there. All sorts of stories coming out. It used to be when I would go to Mexico, my mom would be all worried because you're hearing stories about the gangland murders down in the drug dealers.
Oh, right.
And
yeah.
Basically, it's like, listen, if you're going to a resort and you're staying at the resort, you're not going to have any problems. But now there's all these other stories. There was a ferry bombing on the ferry that goes from Playa del Carmen to Cozumel, and then another one that was stopped before it happened. So there's all these warnings now from our government about travel to Mexico. And at first, when those came out, I thought, well, that's President Trump, you know, standing up to Mexico and fighting over the wall and stuff like that. But now I've got more and more friends saying, I'm not going to Mexico, and it's killing me because I love Mexico and I love going there. So we wanted to talk a little bit more about this. Chris Woody is a reporter for Business Insider, and he jumps on the phone with us right now. Hey, Chris, how are you this morning?
I'm doing well, Matt. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks for being on with us. Overall, do you think that the concerns about travel to Mexico and specifically Cancun and the whole Riviera Maya are being overblown? Or is this something Americans really need to think about before they make that trip?
Well, you know, it's tough to say. I would say my advice would be, you know, you need to consider for yourself what kind of risk you're willing to take. I don't think going to a place like Cancun or the Riviera Maya or in Los Cabos or somewhere in like Mexico City, I don't think going to those places you're going to face an outsized risk as long as you are, you know, responsible and you kind of, you know, carry yourself the way you would visiting, you know, any city in the world or in the U.S.
There is a risk, though, when we travel internationally and that we don't think about much because some of these places seem so Americanized. If you're just going to a resort in Mexico, especially the all-inclusive resorts, they do such a good job of taking care of everything that you don't really realize that much that you're in a foreign land other than everybody has broken English and you're in an exotic location that you know you don't see at home. But there is a bit of a risk, I guess, when we travel overseas, it's sometimes, or not overseas necessarily, but to another country that we don't think about, that if there is a medical emergency, is the healthcare going to be as good? Is it going to be a problem then if you don't speak the language? How much preparation should we take as Americans when we go to other countries and think about if something does go wrong?
Well, it should be something you plan for, something you consider when you go down there. It's you're right to say that somewhere like Cancun or Playa del Carmen or places in Los Cabos, those are the resort areas. They really are enclaves, and you have lots of places to lounge and for recreation and for lodging. But if you need emergency services, if you need health care, if you need something else, you know, that's something you have to provide from get from the local community in a lot of places in Mexico, especially on the outskirts of you know, Cancun and other tourist areas. The services really aren't that good, and there are issues with security. There's corruption is rampant, particularly among police forces. So you know, the cases you mentioned earlier about people being drugged or thinking they're being drugged, I mean, those are obviously serious and something to take note of, but those are really the minority. So I wouldn't discourage people from going to Mexico, and I wouldn't tell them that they need to, back off because of these stories, but it is something to keep in mind when you're planning a trip down there.
The one part of the story that did alarm me or surprised me a little bit when these were first being reported was that there has been a problem with tainted alcohol in Mexico, and that up to, I want to say, I'd have to find it in this report again, that something like up to 30% of the alcohol bought and sold in Mexico is not necessarily produced up to standard, that there is sort of a black market of alcohol sales. And that was surprising to me. How, because especially when we come from America, where we come from such a regulated country, where if we're at a hotel or we're at a restaurant and they're serving alcohol, we fully well expect that it's going to be that there shouldn't ever be any problems with it. We're just not used to that ever being something we would worry about. I know that there's a huge drug cartel issue in Mexico, but I was surprised to read that that it's possible that. These resorts are ending up with, and maybe not through any fault of their own, tainted alcohol.
I haven't done too much work on that issue, so I can't speak to specifics. I imagine there's probably, if you were to just buy, a six pack from a store somewhere in the city, it's probably different than bulk alcohol that's being, sold to a bar or a restaurant. But at the same time, there are issues of with widespread corruption. So it wouldn't really surprise me that if there were these kind of extensive markets of illicit goods or goods being sold in legitimate markets without meeting requirements and regulations.
Until these stories were coming out in the last 6 months or so, most of the talk about any concerns in Mexico has been about drug cartels. And with the way the U.S. and Mexico are exchanging words these days, what is the status of the cartels down there? What's the latest on the wars within the country and the murders that we hear about and read about, as well as the infiltration of the drugs into the U.S.?
Well, so violence in Mexico is on the rise. It's been on the rise since, pretty consistently since about 2015. I think in 2017, it was up by about 25% or so. It went from about 22,000 homicides in 2016 to close to 28,000 homicides in 2017. A lot of that is competition between organized crime groups, and I say organized crime rather than cartels, because one of the trends you've seen that's driving this is kind of a breakdown of these larger cartels. For a lot of reasons, internal fighting, pressure from the government. So they're kind of breaking down into these factions, and they're competing over not only, drug trafficking territories, but they're also fighting over control of things like extortion rackets or oil theft or other kind of criminal enterprises. And that's really driving a lot of the violence. But at the same time, that violence is concentrating in specific areas. A lot of it's in northern Mexico. You have a lot of it in southwest Mexico and up and down the west coast. Tourist areas like Quintana Roo, which is the state that Cancun is in, and Baja California Sur, which is where Los Cabos is, they've seen, considerable increases. I think Los Cabos, it's up, a couple 100%. But a lot of that violence is taking place outside of tourist areas. So, for American travelers, again, it's something to note, but most places Americans are going, this increase in crime is not having a direct impact. And it's important to say that Americans and international travelers, they're not being directly targeted by a lot of this violence.
I know you wrote about you mentioned the oil being stolen, and you wrote a story that the Mexico's oil company is losing more than $1 billion a year to cartels, and its employees are the ones helping this out. It's amazing to think of a country like Mexico actually having cartels stealing. I mean, could you imagine in America us hearing that, you know, gangs are stealing oil to the tune of $1 billion a year? Is that really a symbol of how much strength these cartels really have, that they're actually robbing $1 billion of oil a year from the oil company? That seems stunning.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of factors there. Obviously, you know, these criminal groups, they're strong, particularly in past years when you had larger groups like the Zetas or the Gulf Cartel or the Sinaloa Cartel. When they were at their peaks, they were very powerful, and they can really exercise a lot of influence in specific areas of the country. But at the same time, you know, Mexico's pipeline network, it's vast. There's something like, this may not be correct, but I think it's like 14,000 miles of pipeline. So there's a lot of area, a lot of ground to cover. In the Mexican authorities, obviously they have an issue with corruption, but at the same time, you know, they just can't be everywhere at once. So there's a lot of factors going into that. It's true that cartels are behind this, but we also have people in, you know, in marginalized areas in Mexico where they don't have a lot of services. For them, it makes sense to tap these pipelines to get fuel for their own use and to resell to make some money, because, you know, they don't have many other options. And it's true that employees from Pemex, which is the state oil company there, in a lot of cases, they're complicit. They're making money off of this, but in other cases, you know, they're being forced into it. They face threats and violence from these criminal groups that are doing it.
But I'm sorry, they're actually stealing the oil? Like what? How do you steal oil from a pipeline or off of a train and divert it to somebody? And then who do you sell that to?
So when you're stealing it from the pipeline, a lot of times they tap the line, they break into it, they attach a hose. Some of those attempts are really quite rudimentary. You just have a hole with a hose plugged into it, and fuel is offloaded into like a bucket or something. In other cases, you know, when you have more organized groups doing it, what they'll do is they'll tap the line and they'll have tanks installed under the ground, and they'll cover those, and the tanks will get filled and no one will see it because it's underground, and they'll come back periodically and take out these full tanks of gasoline. And in other cases, you know, if you have Pemex employees working for you, they can just cook the books and you can take that excess fuel straight from tanker trucks and stuff like that. As far as resale, in some parts of the country, you can just drive by roadside stands and they'll have big buckets of it you can buy. In other places, you know, when corruption is at play, you'll have gas stations that buy illegally obtained fuel, and Pemex and the Mexican government have shut down a lot of gas stations that have been doing that. There's other cases, I don't have specifics, but I've heard that, you know, some of the stolen fuel is resold into the legitimate market and makes its way into the U.S. So it's a really complex enterprise with varying levels of sophistication and a lot of factors that are driving it.
That's really amazing to think that they can pull that off. That's impressive, to say the least. So the pipeline itself is not just oil. There's actually produced gasoline going through the pipeline.
I think it depends on the pipeline, but I'm sure that's the case. I haven't done a whole lot of work on the gas industry specifically.
It's amazing stuff. Christopher Woody, a reporter for BusinessInsider.com. I really appreciate you jumping on the phone tonight.
My pleasure.
All right. Have a great evening. Christopher Woody.